remember that ranch breakfast is the cereal that builds champions. It's exploding with a kind of energy that's got more stuff in it than toast, bacon,
eggs,
and toast and bacon and meatloaf, olives, nuts.
Horsemen. Horsemen. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 351, which is accurate. Last week, we kind of got the number wrong. I'm Scott Johnson. Joining me today, Brian, he grew up getting up Dunaway.
Ew. Oh, hi. This week's movie is about a horse, a freaking horse, and his man, a horse man. Why a horse movie, you may ask? I'll tell you why I watched this dumbass horse movie. Because I made the mistake of revealing to my friends and the internet my distrust for these muscle-bound beasts of burden with brains the size of a human child. Brains, by the way, which horses use to calculate how long they have to wait before they can stop pretending to be your friend and start kicking your ass into the ground. Puny human, you have hoof holes for a face now. Let's get ice cream. Look at me. I got the brain of a five-year-old with the body of a killer. I'm in your kitchen. Nay, nay, unpredictable. Anywho, I hope you enjoy my displeasure.
Yeah. This is very good. By the way, were you saying that the brain is the size of a baby or a baby's brain?
Baby brain.
Okay, baby's brain. Got it.
It's even smaller baby's
brain.
Than a baby.
Yeah, the brain turns out.
Do you really? Okay, let's put it this way. How would you feel if suddenly somebody gave your baby a shot and he turned into the beast the size of a horse? What would you do? Run is what you would do.
Yeah, you get the hell out of there. Well done. Also with us, Randy, does the mustache match the drapes, Jordan?
Aloha, Scott, Brian. Hi. Brian. Hi. All right, boys. I've rounded up everything you asked for, so you can get on with shooting this here movie. I just need you to approve the final invoice. Let's see. We procured one used 1978 Starlight camper vehicle outfitted with room enough for a thoroughbred to ride in the back. Three used police motorcycles from a Nevada state surplus sale. One 18-wheeler with an old livestock trailer painted bright red in 1958 for some goddamn reason. A school bus and a whole mess of fairy lights. And we came in just under your total props budget of $85.
Nice.
That's what, you know, if you count for inflation, it's like, you know, a couple grand now. Well done. Finally with us, Brian, how much do they fine you for throwing 50 pounds of camera hardware into the River Ibbot?
That's a really good question. By the way, another good question is, if the carpet are the pubes and the drapes are the hair, then would the mustache be like a valance?
Oh, yes, I can see that.
Yeah, okay. A valance. Oh, my Lord. Well done.
All right. This week on Film Sack, we learned that mamas should never let their babies grow up to be cowboys. Here are three reasons why. Number one, they walk around the Caesar's Palace Casino and don't sit down at a blackjack table or spin a single slot machine or even play one hand of poker. I thought a cowboy's number one game was poker, but apparently it's tire stabbing. Number two, instead of dyeing their mustache brown to hide the gray, they do it to their headshots, which takes a whole lot longer. And number three, number three reason why mama should let their babies grow up to be cowboys, they don't know how to pick up women. Literally. It's right there on the movie poster.
Yeah. Right. When does that happen?
Never.
It never happened.
Because
in the movie.
You know when it was supposed to happen. It was supposed to happen when she got on the horse, but for some reason I guess they decided.
Oh no, it was when she was like beating up on him
Like when she that first fight they have.
Yes, a little fist fight when she's whacking. No,
was a night shot. I thought that was a night
it
shot.
It was a night shot. He never lifted her up upside down like that. That never happened.
When she was wearing that boots, it was when she was supposed to be getting on that stupid horse, and she was all like, and she actually got on it. I was kind of okay.
I think whatever happened there, it was cut from the film, or they were horsing around. Or who knows?
There's a version of the movie poster, and I'm trying to find it right now. Here it is right here, where they kind of show the evolution of that image. One second here. It's on movieposter.com, oddly enough.
Ibbot's about to drop some knowledge and prove me wrong.
All right. Let's see it.
Stay tuned.
Let's see it. Here we go. Oh.
So here's the evolution of that shot. So.
Okay.
It's like Arthur Murray Dance Studios moves.
It
or
is. It's adult entertainment.
You made it worse. It's worse now.
It's worse.
It's actually worse. Like before, it's just the shot of him with her butt in his face and her head. I don't know where that is.
Upside down under his crotch.
It looks like he's crowning birthing something over there.
He's giving her the Sundance Kid, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of blue jean material. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, there's a lot of denim there. But the point is that's the one they went with. Like any of those others would have been more appropriate.
Why is it recommended as adult entertainment on that thing you sent us? We need to post that somewhere so people can see that as well.
No, it's just for parents to go because their kids don't. You know, I don't know. This was 79. This movie made a lot of money. It was the biggest hit of that season. Like they did real well.
That time. Yeah,
I never even heard of it until you guys dug it up and said, "Hey, we should do it on the show.
We should beat this dead horse."
If somebody were to say, "Name a movie with Robert Redford and Jane Fonda that begins with the word electric," I might have been able to pull it out.
I wouldn't have been able to do it. I would have just thought boogaloo or other words that don't work.
Right.
And ends with horsemen.
Yeah.
I actually really enjoyed watching the film because there was like a trip down memory lane. Because like I say, I grew up in a household where my parents loved movies, particularly my mom loved horse movies. And so this movie had been like rented on VHS and watched a couple times. And my dad used to quote something from the film to me, and I'd forgotten what it was. And then watching through the movie, I'm like, oh, wow, my dad quoted several things from this film. Like,
wow.
He really picked up on some of the lines in this movie.
Did he say
chicken livers for 79 cents? Is that what he said?
Was this the origin of all that Willie Nelson music? Was it written for the movie, or was it just used here? Does anyone know?
A bunch of it was...
Yeah, this was the first time a lot of it was heard. His cover
it was covers. Like it wasn't like necessarily Willie Nelson music, right?
Well, Midnight Rider was a cover. Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys was him, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's an original. But I don't know if it was original to this film or if it came from before. Also, I gotta say, and I mean this with all sincerity, the best actor in this movie isn't Robert Redford. He's fine. But it's Willie Nelson. He's really good.
It is Willie Nelson.
Yeah. Hey,
Redford was retired at this point. He was just doing his thing.
This was at the point where Redford wouldn't even do a movie unless you filmed it near Utah where he was now living.
right.
Unless he could sleep in his own bed.
Yeah. He's like, look, if it's within 100 miles of Sundance, I'll do it. Otherwise, F off. I'm not, you know, whatever. And that goes for Wilford Brimley, by the way, who was hanging out. I mean, when he saw him, I thought, oh my gosh, he's right in his neighborhood. Brimley owns a ranch in Hurricane, Utah, which is right down near St. George. Like, it's straight up, let's find a neighbor who's really an actor who lives here.
Right.
It's crazy.
Trivia, that is one of the first bits of trivia, is that and the fact that it was such a tax break since it was Redford's home area. I guess he must have put some production money in it.
They did. Not only that, but they, in this 70 through like 89, or 75 through 89 or so, we were becoming what Atlanta is now. Like Atlanta is where everything's filmed, Walking Dead, movies, freaking Avengers, whatever you're making, you go to Atlanta because the tax breaks are incredible there right now. And it's like Vancouver a little bit. And so we were that for a while, and we had a lot of pride about that. We were like, yeah, Seventh Heaven's being filmed here, and guess what? Touched by an Angel's getting filmed next week. And like we thought that was really cool, and then all that tax stuff went away.
Were they all God related?
No, many of them were. Many of them were, weirdly. But movies too. Like a lot of the movies that show up here, and then suddenly those tax breaks stopped. New laws were passed, and everybody moved out. And there was no more. Well, there was less. There's still some. Like Westworld does stuff here and some other stuff, but you know, if you need some sweet desert and western-y business, there was no better place and no better tax breaks, and that's just not there anymore, which is unfortunate. Or fortunate, I don't know which. I don't know if I want to have traffic stop whenever there's something being filmed somewhere.
Yeah, right.
But right. So, anyway.
We kind of covered this a little bit. I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but first time viewing this for all four of us, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right?
Not for me. Oh. I definitely seen it.
All right.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. You were the question mark. I knew Brian.
But I honestly didn't.
Go ahead.
I honestly didn't remember most of the film. I was seeing it with fresh eyes, except a couple of things. And those things were absolutely the chase, you know, the getaway on the thoroughbred out of some little town.
Sure.
And the whole thing where he rides the horse off the stage and through Caesar's Palace and out onto the strip.
Yeah.
That whole thing I felt like I'd seen so many times. And I was looking around on the internet. It's actually because it's been reshot in so many different pieces of like modern entertainment. Mm-hmm. Like there's Family Guy or Simpsons or whatever. They have, you know, done it shot for shot in so many ways that I just can't help myself.
But also, last time you saw it, you were probably a kid. You're not going to sit there and watch. You're not going to watch Fonda and Redford make out. I mean, you're going to block that out.
Exactly. There are two scenes in here that are probably very entertaining for kids, and that's going to be the chase and him riding through the casino on a horse all lit up.
Sure.
By the way, Dunaway, with all the times you've been to Dragon Con, anyone ever cosplay as Redford in his whole lit up getup?
Lit up getup.
Like,
I wouldn't have known it.
That's true.
Like,
good point.
Yeah.
Now that
good
I'm seeing
point.
It, though, I think it's a great.
It is a great cosplay.
Carry a box of cereal. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Right.
I would do that.
The brightly lit box of cereal is what makes
it. Yeah. Ranch breakfast. What a stupid name for anything.
It's got toast.
It tastes like eggs with dirt in it.
Yeah. By the way, the most opportune moment to catch him and his horse stealing was when he's walking it slowly through a casino lobby.
Let's stop him. I know. We'll close the doors.
The point was saying, look, anything ridiculous can happen to Vegas and people just cheer for it. They don't even think it's something odd.
Look,
right?
Well, look, also, just
cheer
just,
for it. They go right back to gambling.
Right.
And also, everyone looking on didn't know that he wasn't performing. They thought he was doing something funny. He was drunk, etc.
Yeah.
Like he was.
Yeah.
Like that was the most, that was probably the most sensible part of the film for me. I was actually surprised. I wonder if anybody else felt this. I felt like the movie was really rushed up to that moment.
Well, they had to hurry up and establish that, oh, he's burned out, his career is nowhere now, he used to be cool, now he's sold out, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I mean, it was a little, they had to get there quick, but that was a long movie.
They covered that in the first 5 minutes with all those cuts. It's like, here's a guy that's not Redford, this riding something, and here's a belt buckle he won, but it wasn't Redford, but it is going to imply.
Yeah,
opening credits are well done to establish the character without ever really showing you. I mean, you see him in the face shots when he's doing the ads for the cereal and stuff. But it's a very good way to introduce the character without a whole lot of narration, exposition, all that stuff. It's like, all right, you see the slow decline of his popularity as he's, you know, the third thing under the Battle of the Bands attraction poster.
I always appreciate a good intro credit scene that helps establish your movie. I like
this,
that.
But I'm
this
talking about the
a,
first. Act of the film. The first act of the film just felt like edited all to hell to me. Like I kept thinking, oh, now I'm gonna find out how this relationship works. Nope. Oh, now I'm gonna find out what got him from there to there. Nope. Like it was shocking to me. And I you know, I'm used to modern movies that are edited really, really tight. And then
the
film slowed.
Yeah, they were teleporting characters. Quickly. It's like, oh, we're in a day scene. Oh, now we're at night. And he's punching her. What just happened? Where am I at now?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it gallops all the way up until the point where Fonda and Redford are are basically together on their trek. And then from that point, it is a slow trot.
Yeah. And not only that, boy, gallop to trot. Well done. Also,
I'm going to quote that whole thing for the back of our cover box of this week's film set.
I guess I can't use that for my Twitter post. Damn.
No, too late now. But it is a long movie. It's over 2 hours, like just a few minutes over 2 hours. But
Which
it's a little long.
You always have to ask the question: what's the filmmaker, in this case Sidney Pollack? What are they trying to show you? What are they trying to get across with the movie? And all really he seems to want to do is show you Southern Utah. Like that's what this movie is about.
It's beautiful.
It's about seeing the wild vistas.
Yeah, and it's beautiful down there. It's nothing.
This
like
was as much as I complain about the movie. I don't want to watch it again. Please don't ever make me watch it again. it was a good movie. It was a well made movie. It was a good movie.
It's not, but it's not one of those movies. Okay. Horse. I can't believe the horse guy actually said it's a good movie.
How about it was a well-crafted movie?
I'm going to also argue that the horse is not the focus in this movie at all. And absolutely, so that probably helped you a little bit. The horse is very secondary.
But the horse is just a metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'd say as far as movies that like Westerns and things like that, this movie has more of a focus on a single horse. You know, maybe other movies like The Black Stallion and War Horse and, Secretariat and stuff like that do have a higher focus on the horse. But I'd say as far as movies where you've got two big leads, Jane Fonda, Robert Redford, the horse is definitely third build.
I'd say that's true.
It's, the whole reason he does what he does is because of this horse. It may not be... The horse may not be the star of the movie, but he's the catalyst for the movie.
I agree. He should have been named Catalyst. Here's the I'm gonna play Scott Fletcher's take so we can get the plot, and then after that I have an immediate chick in the bucket that's the most obvious one we've had in weeks. So here you go.
The Electric Horseman. Horseman. Sonny Steele used to be a rodeo star, but his next appearance is going to be on a Las Vegas stage, wearing a suit covered in lights, advertising a breakfast cereal. When he finds out they're going to drug the horse in case it's too frisky, he rides off into the desert.
All right. He has almost like a half cold right now, and it sounds great when he has that.
Right. Yeah. And they did drug the horse, right? Wasn't that the whole...
Yeah, they gave him tranquilizers. Yeah. Horse tranquilizers are a real thing, man. That's a deal. Oh, okay, that sound means we got to talk about the chick in the bucket right away. And for me, is like straight up Willie Nelson. I don't understand how you establish him as this important supporting character in the beginning. He's like his manager, basically. He's got a lot of lines, a lot of thoughts, a lot of stuff to say. He sings throughout the thing. And then, and literally in the movie, sings, "Don't let your mama or your kids grow up to be cowboys," or whatever. Or your babies.
Did that bother anybody else? But go ahead.
Yeah, it did. It bothered me. But here's the thing.
Oh, really?
He is nothing.
Okay, let's talk about why in a minute.
After he's in Vegas and she, weasels her way around to try to find out where he might be, we're done with him. Like, that's it. Yeah, he's gone. And by the end of this thing, he is Bill Bixby on the road looking for the next town. And where's Willie Nelson?
I did like that.
Yeah, bummed me out. I liked Willie Nelson in this, and I don't think he should have disappeared. It should have been more with him.
Anyway. Now back to the one more Willie Nelson song.
Yeah, why didn't you like him singing?
It's very it bothers me in any movie, and this might just be my personal preference. Whenever a actor is also singing, you're constantly hearing their songs in the background. I can't quite make the connection. I'm like, am I supposed to be hearing
unless
this
the unless it's supposed
time?
To be the character?
Right,
exactly.
Right.
And
right.
I'm like, I get
takes
disconnected.
You out of it.
Like, what is going on right now?
It's like a troubadour-y kind of, you know what it is? It's that rooster in that animated Robin Hood show where he's just like walking around, Robin Hood and Mary Ann, or whatever he's saying. And he was, he was like that. To me, it was almost like he was narrating moments. Like he would, earlier it was like, all my heroes are cowboys. And then the very next song is, don't let your babies be cowboys. Like, it was like this tonal shift, and then the music would match, and then there he was.
It reminds you that he's Willie Nelson and not Wendell.
The character.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, which was otherwise, and like I said, the acting's good. It's his debut acting. He's never been in a movie before this. This is his first time.
Oh, my God, it was so good.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was great. Like was great. He was a natural. So if, he was probably high the whole time, but whatever.
At some point, if Wilford Brimley, before he sends him off on his way with his $50,000, would have said something like, So, hold on. Let me go eat some oatmeal. It's better than taking my insulin because I don't want to get the diabetes. But it's taking me right out of it.
A little bit. If there had been a diabetes commercial right in the middle of that, I would have been like, what's going on right now?
Come on in.
Yeah.
I can't eat cereal. I get the diabetes.
Yeah.
I have to chop my foot off. But anyway,
diabetes.
Yeah, he's got the diabetes. Hey, you're not going to take that $50,000 deal, are you?
Diabetes.
Okay, you're weird, but all right. Thanks for your help. Yeah, no, I didn't expect to see Wilford Brimley, but I always like to see him. He's great.
He was real young there too, as well. Tell you who else I really
hold on. Quick trivia question: what movie was Robert Redford and Wilford Brimley in together that was also significant, or that was way more significant? And I'll take your answers. Who's got it? Who knows? What was their big? And they worked directly together all through the movie. Who knows? Anyone know?
The Natural.
The Natural is the correct answer. Ding ding ding! Well done. Yeah.
Thank you.
I love that.
Another movie I've never watched.
I love The Natural. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's almost supernatural.
I'm afraid to reveal my other disdain in this world because y'all make me watch the stupid movie.
Are you going to say sports movies?
Ooh. I'm not a big fan of
baseball.
All of them. I'm not a big fan of sports movies in general.
I love a good sports movie.
I'm going to defend you. I'm going to defend you, Dunaway, because I know what you're saying. And I think that there's a certain type of sports movie that I really like. Stuff like Friday Night Lights. It's the whole like where the sport what was the one with Cuba Gooding Jr. Jerry Maguire. Right.
Yeah. Maguire.
It's sports
it's a
tangent.
Backdrop. It's
yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'll you know what? I sound like a judge. I'll allow it. I agree with that. That's a good point. I don't like the ones that are over glorification of the sport like it's some magical place, but I do like them as backdrops. Well, I like movies like Miracle and
they become too predictable, especially if it's a team. I mean, like it's just like, oh, okay, well, I got to win.
I wonder if they're going to overcome all of their challenges and win the big championship at the end.
Right.
Well, yeah, they don't, exactly. But they almost never do.
That's true.
But they learn something.
It's so tropey. It's so tropey that I would be surprised if I'm watching, you know, The Replacements or Major League or something, and they actually do succeed.
Yeah.
And that's the weird thing.
Yeah.
That's what's so great about sports is you don't know what's going to happen week to week, and that's what makes it great. And when you put it in a movie, it's like, I kind of see this coming.
Yeah. For me, so for me, the difference is I like movies sometimes if they're about a real thing or a real event, I'm way more into that. So I was really into Miracle. I thought that was an awesome movie. I thought the acting was great. It was really good about the hockey game between the Russians and Americans in 81 Olympics and all that stuff. That was great. But then I don't like Remember the Titans because that movie forgets the people in that movie are really paper thin as far as how they're explored and stuff. And the sport itself is the thing that's on display. And that kind of, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Go around, if you like sports movies, it's great. It's fine. It's not for me.
Yeah.
Around the table here, favorite sports movie.
It might be Miracle for me. It might be Miracle. I love that one.
Right.
Dunaway.
I'm all about the Bad News Bears because that was the first time I saw a movie where the underdog won and everything else is just derivative to me. I'm sure it wasn't the first to do it, but it was the first one I experienced.
Sir Deluxe.
I want to like have a bunch of answers like best ridiculous. But you know what I'm saying? Like best ridiculous sports movie is Major League for me, right? But it's not a sports movie. It's totally a comedy, right?
It's only a sports movie though. I mean, I'd say you know if the characters do more than one scene play a sport, then it's a sports movie.
There's a lot of baseball in Major League. So like if you hate baseball, that's true of all these. I think that Ryan's thing is that he doesn't have like a side or a team in these things, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like We Are Marshall is a objectively good film. But if you have anything to do with Marshall, like if you went there or you've just been a fan, it's a way better movie to you, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The correct answer was Rudy. We'll accept Rudy.
No, Kingpin is the correct answer.
Oh, Kingpin is pretty great,
I would
dude.
With you. I would actually say
that
I
is
actually
my favorite sports movie.
Yeah.
Because the people in Big Lebowski don't bowl for more than one or two scenes. Yeah, and there's do see the final championship that they keep talking about. If you did, it would be a sports movie, but they don't, so it's not.
Yeah, you're right. No, right. Kingpin's more of a sports movie.
I gotta admit there's one more for me, and that's Sandlot. And it's just because the characters are just so much fun.
Also filmed here in Midvale, Utah. I've been to that field. Yeah, it's much smaller than you think. Anyway.
There's just so many categories. Like Caddyshack is a great farce.
Tin Cup.
And The Wrestler, the Mickey Rourke film, is the most depressing sports movie ever made.
Yeah.
I guess we could even break it down at some point and say favorite baseball movie, favorite football movie, favorite golf movie.
Yeah, you could do that, actually.
What about our favorite horse movie?
I have one. I have my favorite horse movie. You want to, we may as well, let's rub this in, because Dunaway didn't have near the
rub it in or rub it out.
Rub it in to you. Hey, rub it out on you. Whoa, what? Here's what I'm thinking. Horse movies. My favorite horse movie. Probably. Oh shit.
Oh man.
This is hard. This is harder than I thought. This is harder than I thought. I'll do my movie. I know. Hidalgo is my favorite. I like that one.
That's a good movie.
Yeah.
War Horse for me.
I never saw that. I probably like it though.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, it's a nomination, an Oscar Best Picture nominee.
It was a Spielberg deal. Spielberg. Yeah, even more for Brian to avoid.
And tell, you know, talking about your movies where the horse is the star. Boom, that's a movie where the horse is the star. It's right there in the title.
Yeah,
boom.
Yeah, Hidalgo is kind of it was the horse and the dude, so it's not quite the same.
Well, this movie, watch this,
and it's got David Thewlis in it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, I'm in.
And Benedict Cumberbatch.
I'm caught between Black Stallion, because it was that movie I was shown as a kid over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And The Horse Whisperer, which is just an objectively great film.
You probably also like The Notebook.
Yeah.
Not after the first viewing. The Notebook is a movie you can really only enjoy one time. after you realize the horrors of the end of The Notebook, you'll never again love it.
Oh, I know a movie I'm going to give running up to, just because I liked it when it came out, and maybe it's because my kids were super little or whatever. Nick was only two, but I really like Spirit. Stallion of the cinema, or
we got Spirit. Yes, we do. We got Spirit. Stupid horse movie.
It was a cool animated movie, and it was like, I guess that was DreamWorks, but I like that.
I just Googled horse movie on Google, and I got like back about 50 results, and I'm looking through a list of movies, all of which I hate. The only movie that really stands out is Racing Stripes, where it wasn't a horse, it was a zebra pretending to be a horse.
That's right.
maybe you would enjoy 1993's The Silver Bumbry with what's his name, Maximus Prime, what's his name, right. Russell Crowe. Maybe you would like this strange tale from
Maximus Prime.
I gotta give it to you, Scott. Coming up with Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron is a great answer.
It's a great
that
movie.
Is a really fun, enjoyable film.
It's got
heart, and it's got the whole Hans Zimmer score going.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. You still have your Google list up there, Brian Dunaway?
I do.
All right. Next. So the very last movie, when you look at the whole scrolling list of movies, the very last movie is The Electric Horseman. Do you see what the second to last movie is?
You know what's funny? Mine is listed differently. No, it's like the third from last. I have three at the end of that.
Yeah. Oh, really?
What have you been Google searching?
Google.
Mine is the very last one after The Electric Horseman is The Horse Boy.
Oh.
Wow. Okay. Mine is Lady Hawk.
Okay. And I swear to God, I think I'm going to take a screenshot of this and post it. My second to last one is Something to Talk About with Julia Roberts.
Wow.
Nice. That's hysterical.
Get out.
I'm dead serious. I'm taking a screenshot of this right now because
nice.
Let's make sure we all agree that Lady Hawk is not a horse movie.
Yeah, no, it's not. Well, no, there's a horse in it.
A hawk movie.
Yeah. It's a female hawk movie. Yeah.
It's a female, it's a shape-shifting hawk movie.
Yeah, it's not a horse movie. That has horses in it. That's not the same. It's like saying that Lord of the Rings is a horse movie. That doesn't make any sense. I'd say, those shouldn't be on a list of horse movies. But neither should that Julia Roberts thing either.
Yes.
You know, it's not a horse movie, but it has a pretty good happy ending, at least for the horse, the never ending story.
Oh, I'm horse. Glad that went that direction and not some of the weird thing you saw.
By the way, speaking of the horse from Electric Horseman, I just realized what the problem is with the first act being so quick and the second, third act being so elongated. And that's that the movie's called The Electric Horseman. And it's old. And I'm used to seeing modern films where the whole movie would have been beating this guy down, and then finally he gets redemption at the very end.
Yeah.
And instead, this movie, he really gets redemption before we even get to the middle, and it's just a matter of walking the path at that point.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Yeah, I did like that about the movie.
Did you guys ever see The Horse in the Gray Flannel Suit, the Disney movie with a very, very young, like super young Kurt Russell? You guys ever see that?
No, that's one of his old. It sounds like a Disney thing. Oh, there it is right there. The Horse, 1968.
Yeah.
The Horse in the Gray Flannel.
People sometimes forget that that man was nothing but Disney in his young years.
Oh, big
well,
time.
I mean, doesn't it? It feels like, you know, the Shaggy DA and like you were basically saying, let's make another movie where we take an animal and we put it into human stuff.
Totally. That's they had a whole trend of that. And Dean Jones, who's ironically you just mentioned the Shaggy DA, was that's him. He's the dog in the Shaggy DA thing. He was in this also, and I remember loving this as a kid. I'll bet it is utter garbage though now. I bet there's no way this is good, but I saw it like on, you know, some Saturday afternoon Channel 30 thing once in a while or whatever. And I remember just thinking, oh, this is great. That horse is really smart. Now I think I'd hate it.
All right. You know, we haven't talked about that one time yet, other than like mentioning her butt, Jane Fonda.
Can I
Barbarella.
Barbarella. You and I are going to the same place right now. I just want to point out on IMDb, there is a review that talks almost entirely about Jane Fonda, and the title of the review is "Seen This Movie 100 Times."
Yeah, and you have, but that's okay.
This person has seen this movie 100 times.
Why would you do that to yourself? Why would you do that to yourself?
It's because they like the love story. I mean, go ahead.
Is it good though?
Do they mean? I need clarification. Do they mean they feel like they've seen this movie 100 times, or they have watched this particular movie 100 times?
Good point. This reviewer has seen this movie 100 times, and the very first thing he says is, it needed even more Fonda, and that if you didn't like Jane Fonda, you're forbidden from ever watching the movie again.
Well, I like Jane Fonda fine. I mean, she's fine. I don't know. I always found her a little bit, like in real life. In real life, she'd drive me crazy. Like
she's
I couldn't.
A little abrasive.
Yeah. She just all, hello, what's going on? Blam, in your face all the time. Like, I don't think I could do that in real
life.
Why
aren't you working out? You should be working out.
Yeah. You should be working out to put on these sweat ankle things.
And two, and one, and two.
Here, I got a spare set of leggings in the trunk. Here, put these on.
No, that image has really not been helped by Grace and Frankie. That has kind of skewed your idea of Jane Fonda.
It's just what she does, though, and it's fine. She can do whatever, but
they come from a time. Jane Fonda and Robert Redford both come from a time when you were supposed to be an absolute jackass, but then you found somebody that would treat you like a baby, but you liked it for some reason. I don't know what that time frame is.
I don't either. But you're right. That's you just put it in words. The thing I was trying to. It felt very. I don't know, really abstract in my head, and I haven't been able to put words to it. That's exactly it. There's an era of films and stories where people who are abrasive, confrontive, you know, otherwise just on fire all the time, the whole story revolves around them running into somebody who, like you said, treats them like babies, and then they like it. It's weird.
I like it.
What is that? That's a weird psychological weird thing there.
It is odd.
You know what that is? I'll bet I know what it is. And I have zero right to speak about this, but I'll bet it's like meant to be a remnant of the 60s and 70s women's movement where you had like, we're not wearing bras because you want us to. We're not doing this or whatever. You know, it's also very stereotyped in my head because I wasn't even alive for most of it. But all of that stuff then has this knock-on effect of, but you still need to be wanted and you still want to cuddle with somebody, you still want to be you still want Robert Redford to think to see through all this and see that inside you're just like everyone, you know what I mean? Like I bet that's something there.
It was in full swing in the late 70s where we were trying to figure out, were men supposed to be sensitive, were women supposed to be in the workplace, where, you know, and it was just like, but okay, how far do you go in one direction before you lose all identity in the other? And yeah, so we were struggling with that.
You're saying this way better than I am saying it.
I just want to clarify. You're talking about the portrayal, not the substance.
Oh,
because
right,
the substance goes all the way back.
No, like, purely, back the purely betrayal. Century, yeah.
In the 19th century, we had the idea in books of the lone cowboy with a rough exterior and the tough woman who, you know, has to be tough because she couldn't survive while he's out on the range otherwise, and all this, like these are actual things, like people actually lived this way
It's a tale as old as time. West. Yeah, exactly.
Which is on Netflix.
I'm saying I don't think it comes at all from any women's movement. I think the women's movement affects the art that you're seeing, especially in 1979.
Yeah,
but right. The substance of it is,
I totally agree.
It's much bigger than that.
Yeah, that's and entirely right. That's entirely right.
Backpedaling for us, Randy. Thanks.
But also, it's worth pointing out this movie subverts some of those tropes. This movie, for instance, it has Robert Redford be vulnerable from the very beginning, from the first time you see him, and he's drunk, and his boys are trying to put his clothes on him, yeah. Like. He is not a capable person.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He, you know what I'm saying? And,
yeah.
And so like, it also subverts those tropes with her where she falls in love with him a little bit, but at the end of the movie, is she riding off in the sunset with him? Hell no.
No, they don't end up together. It's that. I like that. I like that
That's a nice breaking of the trope.
Especially too. Right after we just saw Riding Lawnmower into the Sunset movie the week before. So it's good to see that, right? Like, but you're totally right, and it's the whole point of the movie is for both of them to. I felt like the message was, hey, when you get out into the raw world where there's no conveniences, you're out in the middle of the desert, and you got to just survive and take care of the horse's legs, and you know your food is just barely there, and you got to sleep on the dirt and all this. That everybody becomes their primal self, and in his case, this is where he belongs. He's going to survive and make himself thrive, and she, on the other hand, has to humble up, learn how to ride a horse, not be a city girl. And it's it's this idea that the uncredited character of the untamed land, swoops in and says, here's who you really are, because on my face, you can't be nothing but. Which is,
The really interesting comparison, the interesting comparison for me is between this movie and Bad News Bears.
Yeah.
Because what happens to Redford's character in this movie is he sobers up.
Yeah.
And he's the first or third of the film. He's just drunk as can be. And he sobers up and he becomes like half normal person. And Bad News Bears, same thing. Walter Matthau is a drunk. And, in the last part of the movie, he's portrayed as being a better man because of the fact that he, gets away from the bottle.
Yeah.
This is like, I wonder why they didn't give us a little more of that in this film. Why that?
Well, the question is this: the from the trivia we read, the production was breakneck, and Sidney Pollack was writing the script every day before they were filming. Mm-hmm. He was filling in stuff. So I mean, it was a little rushed. Considering that, it's amazing. It's an amazing film. From what we saw. Behind the scenes,
yeah.
He did a great job.
It's also I got to give whoever's doing photography direction here credit. It looked real nice, and the film transfer looked good. And when you weren't in town and looking at people's weird afros and high heels and stuff, you got a sense that oh man, that is just beautiful down there. What's funny is they show St. George briefly, where he's kind of on a chase with the cops. That is so not what that town looks like now. Like I can't imagine.
Everything with the cops was just terrible.
Yeah, but it looks so different now. That whole place has developed. So part of me was sad, but part of me was like, also, it's at least it's not such a dirt water dump anymore.
Hey, you guys remember during the 70s when when cereal conglomerates were the big baddie? That's right. Who you had to really
General
worry about.
Bills.
Yeah.
Oh, it was different times.
Yeah. What was so wonderful to me was seeing Las Vegas before the explosion of building in the late 90s. I couldn't get enough of the exteriors because they were it was really well filmed.
Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. And let's talk about that because I can't. Thinking about the days when there was nothing north of Circus, you look north on the strip from Circus, and you don't see. The Stratosphere, you don't see like the Wind and the Encore and all that stuff. I guess north of Circus, you don't. But you do have your Slots of Fun, and strangely is still Slots there.
Yeah.
But then you look south from, there's a shot where you're looking south from Caesars, and I think you see maybe the Aladdin, and then nothing. No Mandalay Bay, no Excalibur, New York, none of that
just
stuff.
Desert.
I love that.
It's just desert. It's crazy.
I would love to go back to 1979 Las Vegas, because I feel like I'd clean up. It was before they started doing 3-2 blackjack, changing things. If you play perfect blackjack strategy, you could go back to 1979 and take the house for everything.
Dude,
you'd
fit right in.
Oh, and I remember, you know, I remember before all these things. I remember when the Dunes was still standing before it was even knocked down to make Bellagio. And I remember going to Las Vegas the first time I went when Caesar's Palace was one building.
Yeah,
and that was remarkable to see. Yeah. Like now, I was like, oh wow, you can't even really see the fountains like this.
No, they're barely there. They're barely there. Yeah. They're sort of like this weird afterthought now. It's so weird.
And so there's a whole where's Robert? Where's Sonny bit? Probably drunk in Barstow thing. And then he shows up late in a car, and he's just cruising down the strip. He turns into into Caesar's Palace.
Yeah. Right.
He just turns into Caesar's Palace without stopping for foot traffic at all.
Yeah.
And just right up to the valet.
To the front door. Yeah. Like,
oh my God. Like, I held my breath.
Like you can just leave your car there to the valet and walk right in. It's 8 steps.
Yeah.
From the street to the door.
I've never been to Vegas. All I know is that I felt like Vegas Vic. Like came to life in this movie. Did that happen? Was that something
big
that happened?
Neon.
Yeah, the neon cowboy.
He's not there anymore,
no,
is he?
There was a movie. Yeah, no.
Thought they get rid of him. Yeah. Down to Don Fremont.
He was downtown for a while.
Well, yeah, he was down in Fremont for a while and he's not there now. I was there last trip I went. He's nowhere now. I don't know what happened to him.
I think they've got him at Neon, at the Neon Graveyard.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Because they, had, a real like, thing.
They had him at Fremont for a while and then something changed there. I don't remember what happened.
Yeah, Vegas Vic. And there was a woman too, the Silver Slipper woman, and can't remember.
She might still be down by that, what is it, the D or whatever.
Yeah, Vegas Vicky is what she's called.
Glitter
right?
Gulch.
Glitter Gulch, maybe. I forget.
Brian, I paused the movie and I just took in, there was a shot where you're just above Circus looking south. Yeah. And I was just like, wow, you could see Desert Inn. You could see the Silver Slipper.
Yeah.
You could see Sands.
Aladdin.
And there was another. Oh, the Holiday Inn. The Holiday Inn was huge.
Yeah,
it was like they filmed this in Vegas.
it was cool to see all that stuff. I like that.
And it used to be a thing for me, or it kind of still is a thing for me. Whenever you watch a movie that takes place in Vegas and you have got somebody going down the strip, either walking or driving or riding a horse. And they always do this thing where it's like, okay, now they're at Bally's. Oh, now they're at Mandalay Bay. Okay, now they're up at the, at the Sahara.
An hour later.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But it's like cut to look like, you got these different shots looking at them from different angles. And there's always a different casino behind them.
Yeah.
This one actually, watching, it's like, oh, yeah, this is exactly the path you would take. You'd go Caesar's Palace. The Stardust, rest in peace, Stardust.
Yeah.
And
probably easier to film. Probably easier to film then or something. But
probably.
Well,
plus you have a horse as opposed to like, all right, we're burning daylight here. We need to get this horse.
Yeah.
Back to the thing.
It's so weird though.
I remember
just
a time that Vegas Vic was on the strip.
It was so well, it was still down on Fremont location wise, right?
Right. This movie actually starts your view of Vegas on Fremont Street.
Yeah.
And then it just suddenly teleports you to the strip.
Yeah, you're on the main strip. But the strip, that's really weird. I like to go back in time and just walk around there. Or you know what I wish Google Earth would do? I wish Google Earth, because I have the VR version of that, and it's awesome. You can go just zoom right down to anything. Walk around Vegas in modern day is really neat in VR. Yeah. But have time frames. That would be so cool.
The ability to walk down 1979 Vegas.
That'd be great, dude. I'd love it. Yeah. Wear bell bottoms in VR.
That was about, I want to say, let's see, I think I was about 11 the first time I went to Vegas. My grandparents took me and inadvertently took me to a nudie show.
Mm.
And I think it would have been 1981. So it would have been pretty close to this time frame. We stayed at the Stardust, but we went to see a show at the Flamingo. Huh.
So I want to ask Brian Dunaway. You said you've never been to Las Vegas. Is that because you've lived and traveled east of the Mississippi your whole life, for the most part?
For the most part, yeah.
It's far away.
I lived in Phoenix for a while, but I was so busy working, I didn't have a chance to stop and go do anything entertaining. So, yeah, going to Vegas is kind of like, hey, Brian, how you want to take a whole week to go to Vegas? Oh, no, I'm good.
No, never take it. Never do a full week in Vegas anyway. That's my recommendation. Yeah. But I would go, if you ever went, I would make sure that's when I was able to go down there. I'd love to go down there with you.
Yeah. And this is, I always make this deal for friends and family. And that is, you know, I live a 4-hour drive from Las Vegas. It's nothing to me. If you're ever going, tell me and I'll show up. But then friends and family always tell me, oh, I forgot, we're in Vegas and it's Wednesday evening. I'm like,
yeah,
all right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've done that to you. No, I it's really fun. It's only 5 hours from me. So if you ever do it anyway, you just let us all know and we'll have a little Film Sack reunion down there. It'd be great. Oh,
let's go to Vegas.
Yeah, it'd be really fun. All right.
2 days. 3 days max.
I want to punch Jane Fonda. That's a ride, right?
Oh, wait. Hold on. That was that punching Jane Fonda in the face. Kind of hardcore.
Let's talk about that. I was really taken aback by both that and then later in the film when she realizes that he's mad at her and he thinks she's betrayed him, blah, blah, blah. And she just yells at him, slap me, hit me. Yeah. And I'm like, what's going on here?
All of that was tonally shifty for me. I was like, wait a minute. What territory are we in now? Maybe in 79 people are like, oh, yeah, this is a Saturday night at my house. I don't know. But for me, I was like, ooh.
That used to be a thing in the movies. You used to have, you know, a hysterical woman and then a guy would slap her. And then it would be, and then everything would be better.
Yeah.
Get a hold of yourself, woman.
Right, but that was horrible.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Say it wasn't horrible.
Right.
It used to be a thing.
Yeah. Right. It just used to be a thing, and it was more accepted. And I'm glad it's not now, because that's terrible.
Because that's what you would do. You would grab a hysterical woman, shake her a couple of times, slap her, and then y'all would be kissing 2 minutes later. That's how you made the loving.
Yeah, which sucks. It's so stupid. Yeah. And I listen to these radio dramas all the time from the 40s and 50s, and they're full of that stuff. Just tons of it. There's always some hysterical woman in the play, and the guy's always, get a hold of yourself, smack. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know what came over me.
I couldn't believe that Pollock wrote her demanding that he slap her.
Yeah.
That just blew my mind. Yeah. And of course the whole thing revolves around he lied to her, or he allowed her to be lied to about where he's going. And then she comes around to being allied with him. They have sex, but the lies keep going. Like they don't ever really tell each other the truth until that climax scene where they're yelling at each other.
You think they were full on doing it? You think they were doing it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
The characters or the actors?
The characters, not the actors. I mean, my point is, this was like one of those movies where we kiss and we fade away, and the implication is, oh, well, they probably did.
Well, no, we get the blurry scene of like them kind of, you see a lot of skin, you can't kind of tell what's going on, but it fades back and forth between that and them trekking on the trail. And I think that's like, all right, this is as close as we really want to get to showing these two doing it.
That's all we need. Now we don't need the full show.
Thus bringing us to this sound. Scott's least favorite thing in the movie, the thing that grossed him out the most.
Oh, so many things.
The idea of people out in the middle of the desert for who knows how many days they've been out there now. They are all eating
nothing but beans and liquor.
Yep, just disgusting, hair of the dog, nasty ass people doing it in the desert. That is gross. So there's my gross thing of the movie.
But when you don't have a toothbrush yourself, and your partner doesn't have a toothbrush, really doesn't even matter. Like,
if you're all eating beans, I mean, it's all going to taste like your mouth anyway,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
That's horrifying, dude. Everything you just said.
You never went to high school, and you know if you was eating Doritos, you fed your Doritos to your girlfriend too. So,
Dorito kissing. Out. Look at this. Wow. We really found a trigger. Like, Cheeto. Cheeto making out.
That's foul. When I was a teenager, I would find some damn gum. I would be a human.
Really?
Human. Yes, I would be a civilized human being, and I'd find some damn gum or something. I wouldn't just go, hey, baby, I just ate Cheetos. Come over here and put your tongue down my throat. Brr, brr, brr. Here, John Goodman, once again. There you go.
As far as, like, body horror goes, this movie was very genteel. I, like, there was really not anything. Like, there was even in that dirty hotel scene where the boys are all sitting around drinking and talking nonsense.
Yeah.
I really thought, oh, there's going to be something gross in here. Like, somebody, you know, drinking out of a random bottle with a cigarette in it or something.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But it did not happen at all. This movie was almost trying to portray being out in the woods as a kind of clean activity.
I completely agree with you, and that's why it bothered me even more, because I know better, and the implication just, that's what got me. It's like what I didn't see was worse than what I saw, because it's all about what that stuff implies. It's kind of like some of the best murders I've ever seen in a film are off screen. Sure. Because my imagination does the rest, and this is one of those cases where I was like, oh, okay, you guys, seriously. This is not good. Get yourselves some sanitary wipes. Let's clean this up. Ugh, so gross. All right. Anyway, so there's that. Hey, did you know Sidney Pollack also directed? This is crazy to me. He directed the TriStar Pictures logo, now owned by isn't Sony.
He directed the logo.
Yeah.
Logo, get over here.
And it's the same horse. It says here, it's according
just,
to the trivia.
Oh, it's not just the same horse. That scene where you see Rising Star running.
And then there's a shot of him running to you, like you're free.
That's the footage.
Yeah. So, because I had to show Tina, I'm like, oh my god, do you recognize that? Because we've seen that logo so many times, it's like it's embedded. And as soon as you see the horse doing that, it's like, oh, you hear the music. So it's not so much that Sidney Pollack created that, it's just that they used the footage that Sidney Pollack
did. Sidney Pollack feel any of the irony of making that horse his corporate symbol after they made Amco pull it out in the
remember this film? I'm kind of mad at this film for not actually having any risk. Like the characters ultimately, that like you're thinking there's a showdown coming between him and the bad guys, so to speak, but the bad guys find out that it's actually doing wonders for their business.
Yeah.
So they don't. They just kind of drop charges. Like that just felt cheesy to me. Mm. I don't know. I didn't like it.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
I like it.
I did. They were pretty cartoony. Those corporate dudes.
They were more cartoony than the Mr. Magoo that was going on in that one scene.
Yeah, and the. You know, your average southern central Utah gas station is going to have a Mr. Magoo going on the television set. It's pretty normal down here. We expect that sort of thing.
I'll tell you what, the most normal thing, the most realistic thing to me was Jane Fonda going into some diner and there's a 13-year-old girl holding down the fork.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like,
that just felt so real to me.
The reason that felt fake to me is because the way she said a certain word, which I recorded and I will play for you here in a bit, but she says a word that I go, uh-huh, that's not how you say that word. So we'll talk about that.
I have a couple of things about the chase scene.
Yeah.
The cop chase scene, that late 70s funk music was always funk. Why was it always funk?
Oh, yeah, I like that stuff. I like it.
Oh, suddenly you're transported into a television show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was like the action part of, I don't know, Hunter or something.
Yeah, or any episode of Chips.
The whole entire soundtrack was like that for me. It just didn't. It felt out of place, and it was from somewhere else. It never felt like it matched for me. Didn't like it.
Well, and then it has the Dukes of Hazzard stunt with the cop cars.
Yeah.
What was that doing in this movie?
Was it the one where they landed on top of each other, made a car sandwich? Yeah. That was real dumb. Real good. Kind of great, but dumb.
Right. Well, and it is the... I don't know. I feel like it's the Samuel L. Jackson getting eaten by a shark scene of this movie. Like if you've seen, this movie, and maybe Randy, you can speak to this as a kid, you said you remember the chase, but is it really all the chase or do you just remember one police car landing
on
the other?
Honestly, I didn't remember the police car sandwich because in my memory, that is so attached to other things.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
In my memory that I've seen a car upside down on another one, but
you have Smokey and the Bandit. I'm sure had it.
Sure,
did they?
Almost 100% sure.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if they sandwiched them.
Also,
I just think there was a happy accident while they were doing that stunt,
right?
Yeah,
and they just kept it and felt like they had to put it in the film because it was so weird.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's great though. I mean, in that context, it's kind of great. But in the movie, the tone of the movie shifted to be very unrealistic and cartoony at that moment. And I just went, that's never going to happen. You'd never, ever have a scenario where in a car chase, somehow inadvertently, one of the cop cars would flip over and be on top of the other one. That's so dumb. And it would keep driving.
And another thing, too, I was curious. Do you guys remember the late 70s and if cops in cars would wear bike helmets? I mean, they were wearing motorcycle helmets, right?
I don't remember that. Was that a thing?
The stunt driver, in the movie, they did. I don't remember. Yeah, the two guys driving next to each other were wearing. Yeah,
it must be because they were stunt dudes. Yeah. And it was enough to say the audience could go, oh, they're cops because they have those helmets. But yeah, I never saw them on anybody except like John and Ponch. You know,
Ponch.
If you're riding a bike, that was it.
When the chase first starts, you're like, oh, wow, no way a horse can outrun a motorcycle. And then you start thinking, oh, but a motorcycle can't get over rough terrain. So this is going to actually be interesting. Then you realize, oh, wait, there's no way a guy on a motorcycle can contest a guy on a horse.
Right.
The guy on the horse will just, he'll just keep going.
Yeah. Same train of thought.
There's actually no real problem there. He's gonna get away.
Yeah. No. Yeah, it's like a Protoss zealot versus a Terran battle cruiser. It's just not. It's not supposed to work. They don't. That is not a Brock paper scissors. That you know, paper's gonna lose because scissors is in the air. Yeah.
StarCraft. Okay.
Oh, also that there's a scene where he walks around in a circle. It's kind of a montage where he's training the horse.
Yeah.
It's that exact scene exists in The Horse Whisperer, and now I wonder if that's on purpose. If it was like
that's
a
just what
reference.
He does.
Yeah. Might have been
had to lead to it, right?
Yeah.
And it makes no sense. Yeah. By the way, why is he circle walking that horse when he's about to set it free? It's gonna.
Why train it just to release it?
Yeah.
So it can go and train all of its friends once it's free.
he can share our human ways.
Go teach your friends how to walk in circles.
That weird end scene, that was weird for me when he introduced the horse back into the wild, and I was like, what is going on right now? They're like running towards each other like on a beach scene, and now they're running away from each other, and what's going on right now? I didn't understand none of that.
That was all a little bit weird. Also, I never felt very connected to the horse. So I was like, finally, get rid of the damn horse. You know what I mean? A good horse movie is supposed to have you feel for the horse and look into its big glassy eye and go, oh, this horse, I just want to hug it and kiss it and be with this horse. But and parting is such sorrow and all that. But this didn't do that for me. This one was just like, all right, that big dumb animal that's been a pain in your ass for the last 6 days, just get rid of it.
Look.
You really don't get any sort of real connection to the horse in this film. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Do you know why? Because Robert Redford felt like the whole time he felt like the only reason he wanted to get the horse out into the open was because he wanted that horse to be able to get some. Because he was so focused. He was so focused, just like they drugged the horse. I'm like, oh, that's bad. Yeah. That's bad. You know, that's going to make him sterile. And I'm like, why is that bad? I mean, it would be a bummer, but I mean, it's not bad. I'm going to release him to the other mares. Look, you see him jumping up and down. It's because he can smell the mares. And if it's released him into the mares, and then he's going to do the mares and he's going to make baby horses.
Yeah.
Wild thoroughbreds. Yeah. Sons of champion.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I didn't understand
that.
He was
that's
very
the crazy thing.
Which is will
that a,
that'll yeah, end up
keep in mind, horses don't have recreational sex. Bro.
Right.
right.
They'll end up. They'll all end up
it's
in Wilford.
The summer of free love for horses.
They'll all end up in Wilford Brimley's ranch anyway. It's fine. Brimley gets more horses. He wins either way. He'll get his $50,000 one way or the other. Is all I'm saying.
I could never understand whether this horse was not allowed to stud or not. It was weird. Like I get that it's a very valuable horse, but for its purpose, which was appearing in promotional spots, why? Right. Who cares? You could use any horse.
Yeah.
Like
just like they used any dude. Like they the whole thing at the beginning where they used another guy on the horse.
Right.
Well, like why even have the horse?
This is either a $12 million horse because of its stud value, or it's not. One or the other. You know?
Yeah, it's a pretty binary choice.
We'll get an email from somebody. I think there's going to be some horse expert that writes in to say, here's why that horse, you know, it's a gorgeous horse, and here's why that horse was so.
Well, if horse expert has continued to listen this far, I would be surprised. I would be shocked.
Yeah, all right, good point.
It's a really good point. All right, I'm going to play some good points. They're called clips, and have some right here. Here's one about, that's still got the barf sound up. Here we go. Here's one, something about looking dumb.
Wearing them flippers on your feet, looking dumb, acting like a damn penguin.
I like that line for whatever reason. acting like a damn penguin. This is a ADR as hell is what I wrote here. This is Jane Fonda sounding like she recorded all her lines in a closet. So here's that.
So they don't want us to talk to the cowboy.
Where do you want to start? I got to get a sandwich.
What do you mean, where do I want to start?
She was not in that room.
Oh, what do you mean, where do I want to start?
Yeah, what's going on? We now well, we need to get our mouth working 9 to 5. All right.
She was about 3 inches from a microphone, but you, the scene is like in a
big open space. Or, yeah, it's terrible.
In a diner.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Here's, you know my biggest problem with Jane Fonda though was in this movie. It wasn't even her fault.
What?
It was her hair color.
What,
it kept
really?
Changing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't
it
even really a color to begin with, as much as like the idea of brown and gray.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. It's weird.
How old she would have been? Let's see. She was born in 40.
Or brown and blonde or. Brown, gray,
the photo, by the way, I sent you guys, shows her earrings pulling her lobes way too low. She's got to stop.
Yeah, that's hard.
Got to stop
that's
doing harsh. That. Okay, so she was born in 37. I don't know what that makes her now, but she would have been, what, in her 30s during the?
Makes her 80.
Yeah, she'd be 80 now. So she
was looked a lot older than 30 in that movie. No offense, Jane Fonda, love you.
I think everyone looked older than 30 when they were 30 in 79. I just think
yeah,
they
all
just
of a sudden,
did.
Well,
right?
Again, if she was
how much?
Yeah.
If she was born in 37, then she was 42 here. So, she looks.
Wow, yeah,
she looks
she
42.
Okay. She turns 80 on December 21st of this year. Holy
wow.
mackerel!
Look at that. Yeah, she getting back with Ted. No. Okay.
No, I was amazed to look back at her notes and realize that those two split up in 2001. I thought it was much more recent, but it was
a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah, a long time ago.
He tried to colorize her black and white nude photos. And she said
she and Redford were about the same age. He's born in 36, so right. They're both early 40s while they're making this film, and they look older. I think because they're kind of got the wrinkles from. You know, tanning. They're
in
like
the smoking.
They're yeah. actors. Yeah. Oh, in the smoking. Yeah, yeah. That's true.
And the being held upside down by Redford.
Yeah, I don't think he smoked, but yes, I think that era everybody had a different face, and before that, even more so. Like people in their early 40s in like the 60s and 50s looked like 60-year-olds. Like it was a weird thing how that went. Now you see a 35-year-old like, ah, you freaking kid, what are you doing over there, kid? They don't look like old people. Anyway, he's a handsome man, I will say that. Here's Willie Nelson being good.
Sonny hadn't been himself lately. They've been a little down on him here, but it's okay. He's just a cowboy. Sometimes he loses the best part of himself.
You going to smoke all that weed or pass it over here?
Right. Yeah, everybody else smelled like Marlboros. He probably smelled like a dispensary.
I just
want you to know, listening to that clip, he has the exact same voice and accent and delivery as my grandmother.
Oh, wow.
Like,
really?
He sounds exactly like my grandmother, who's been gone for 20 years. I can't get over it. Like, it's freaking me out a little bit.
Did she ever say, "Mamas, don't let your babies work at Blizzard in Irvine, California"? Did she ever say that?
That would be a weird song.
It would really be a weird song. It wouldn't. I don't think it would play as well on the radio. Here's something I just wrote. That old phrase, which probably means I don't think it's a phrase, but here it is.
So don't tell no jokes. Don't lift up nobody's dress. Okay.
Oh yeah. Don't tell no jokes and don't look up nobody's dresses.
I don't think it's a phrase. It's basically him before the press conference saying, "Look, just
here's
shut up.
Here's your two worst qualities.
Don't be a lech and don't try to be funny because you really just need to say yes, no, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Yeah. That's it.
And what's he do? First, he goes straight
out.
Yeah,
he makes a joke.
Yeah.
And then he goes over and picks up Jane Fonda's skirt. It was
look right up there. Scene. All right up there. Here's I wrote, "Is there such a thing?" So here's this.
You're a 3-time all around world champion cowboy.
Five.
5 times all around world champion cowboy. And now you're selling cereal.
Is there a world champion cowboy?
Rodeo cowboys.
Oh,
that's
absolutely.
Where they were pretty loose with the cowboy term here. They definitely meant rodeo cowboy.
Okay, well, that I could see. You know, rodeo champions, I know, but being called a world champion cowboy is a weird title to me.
Right.
That's like saying you're a world champion pirate or you're...
She does the ultimate...
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
You go.
Okay, she does the ultimate media dick move, though, which is, you were really popular at one time. People loved you. Now you can't buy a friend. How do you feel about that?
How does that feel?
Yeah, it's not very journalistic.
It feels like shit.
Yeah, it's not very journalistic compared to how she tried to portray herself as a journalist. She's kind of a crappy
reporter.
No,
but it's accurate as to what they do these days.
Yeah,
you know? Right. Hey, why them rodeo cowboy belt buckles so big?
So you can serve hors d'oeuvres on them at social functions.
Protection. I mean, real cowboys didn't even wear dang old belt buckles. They wore suspenders. Why rodeo? What? Are they supposed to stick something down in them belt buckles?
Did you say choke support?
So my understanding, I've been to a lot of rodeos. My understanding is that when you are riding on a saddle that has a saddle horn, that knob that's right in front of you,
a good
big belt buckle is like a jock strap. It's gonna
shield.
Bounce off of that thing if you get thrown forward.
Well, you must really think your junk's big if you think you need to take all that.
That's my understanding.
Arrogant.
Of course, the big belt buckle is a sex signal, right? That's what you're supposed to. You're like that's why wrestlers
like the big make boots, it right? Look smaller,
big,
wouldn't
that? He's got a big buckle. He must have a big. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Big penis.
I need this belt to keep all this inside.
Yeah. Must have a big belt.
Must have a huge belt and pants that need to be held up well. I look at it and go, they don't have any, they need to get a smaller belt. That's what I say. It's dumb.
I thought
looking.
It was because they was trying to fit the state of Texas on there.
Oh, yeah, boy. Put a big old star right in the center. Yeah! Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be just more of a compensation thing. The bigger the belt buckle, the smaller the stuff behind it. Kind of like that's why wrestling, those big wrestling belts.
I worry about that. I actually started reading about that. I was trying to figure out why, you know, because belts in place of trophies is a symbol and why they, I don't know. I couldn't get all the information.
Yeah. Here's the psychiatrist from MASH.
Excuse me, gentlemen. We're trying to rehearse.
All right. The chicken was the baby was a chicken.
I'm so glad. Yeah. We got to talk about the other Sydney in this movie.
Yeah. Sydney, what was his name in MASH? Sydney.
Alan Arbus was the actor, but Sydney.
What was it? You need to go see Sydney so and so, Colonel.
Something
Potter
Stein or something.
Something Stein.
Feinberg, Sydney.
Sydney Feinberg, Floorsberg, Feinsteinberg.
Yep. Any chance I may have had of?
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I screwed it up already. All right. There's that guy. Then you got what? I don't know. What's this?
What are we gonna say to the reporters?
Tell them to go to bed.
Tell them to go to bed. Yeah.
Now, Randy sent us a link to Ty Murray. Didn't he marry Jewel?
Friedman. Sydney Friedman.
Oh, Sydney Friedman.
Sorry, I can't just let it go.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, this Ty Murray guy, king of the Cowboys, 9-time world champion cowboy, 89, 94, 98 all around, 93, 98 bull riding, co-founder of the Professional Bull Riders League. He's a TV analyst for CBS.
Yes, he was Jewel's husband, Brian.
Right.
Oh, he was married to Jewel the singer?
Because I remember when I first time I saw him, I was like, why did she marry him?
Yeah. And he said, because I really like her weird teeth, he said. I'd like to have them teeth in my life. Those are weird teeth that Jewel has.
I didn't like her teeth.
Let's see. He is, they're not married now, though.
They're divorced.
Good news for me.
Yeah.
I saw Ty Murray at the Star of Texas Rodeo about 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And he was the main attraction. Like there was a real rodeo going on and then he was going to be one of the competitors and what was the band? 38 Special played after all the rodeo was over.
He's got a 3-letter Twitter handle, PBR. That's awesome.
Oh, wow. He got that early. Jeez.
He did. And he's popular. He's got 142,000 followers. And
I know. How did the beer company not snag that before him? That's brilliant.
Yeah. He says he's still competing. Can that be right? Or maybe he's just doing it for funsies. But there's these guys now. If you watch
miniature horses,
these bull riders now. So the way I have it in my head is they all just are, you know, jeans and a cowboy hat and they hold the hat down or whatever. And some of them still do that. But most of these guys are wearing like full head and face masks and like
which
all
to
kinds
me
of stuff
is
now.
Just smart.
Yeah, no, it seems smart to me too. I believe if I'm gonna ride a bull, I'm gonna wear a helmet.
Hey, look, I am still super impressed. You're riding a bull. You can wear as much armor as you want to. I'm still impressed.
Yeah. Either way, it's something I don't do. So good job.
And when you go to the rodeo and they finally get to that main event, they play the loudest, crunchiest rock music while the bull is actually working.
Yeah,
and it's hysterical. It is so funny because you're sitting there in an arena of people and suddenly you're hearing Metallica while this cowboy is riding on the back of a bull. It's wonderful.
It's what you want. All right, here's another clip of this is weird.
Wait a minute, you hit my face, you son of a bitch.
How'd you forget?
Wait a minute.
Hold on a second.
Just let's back up. didn't you whack me in the
didn't you what? Didn't
I've been having to use cover up every day for this big bruise on my face. I almost forgot.
Didn't you batter me just moments ago?
It was the worst part of the movie for me. It took me so far away from what the movie was trying to do.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
I understand the need for the scenes where they're completely mad at each other and there's like all this falling out before the lovey bits. I get that, but it doesn't have to involve punching her in the face.
Well, that's probably why she didn't end up with him at the end of the film. Like, well, you know, I like you. You're handsome and all, but you're abusive, so see ya.
Yeah, have fun. And then he's on the road.
Run with your horse.
Ding, 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 ding. Looking for the next town to become the Hulk in. Here's I wrote hate this sound. Oh yeah, I think this might be a good one for Ibbot because I think you hate this sound also. So here we go.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't like this. The dust scrapes.
No. Yeah. I mean that's scraping
that's the eggs.
Yeah.
Right. You don't use metal silverware on a nonstick pan.
Yeah. Mm. You don't.
You don't. That's how you scrape off the Teflon, and you get that in your food, and then it's not nonstick anymore.
And then
it's stick.
It rust.
Then your colon is nonstick. You don't want
that. Do you think they have nonstick
in 79?
Yeah.
I don't think they had Teflon. I don't know if they had Teflon, but I think they had. Right.
They had stuff, didn't they? They had things.
Yeah.
Now was that Gus? Who? Because Gus was by far my favorite thing.
Gus was great. Yeah. The freaky
Please
friend.
Tell me you got some. Gus.
I think so. Here, let's find
out. I'm in the kitchen!
Here.
Actually, DuPont registered the Teflon trademark in 1944.
Okay. Wow.
Okay.
So Teflon's been around.
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
Teflon's been around.
I wrote, you're standing in it.
Boy, are you full of shit. With all due respect, man. And you're standing in poison sumac.
Oh, what's poison sumac?
Sumac.
What's that? What is that?
It's akin to poison ivy, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Or oak. All right.
Yep.
Whatever.
Poison ivy, poison oak, poison sumac. When you're a Boy Scout, you're taught how to identify these.
I was one of those, but I don't remember. Here's Mr. Magoo.
Good gracious. A bird's nest.
I feel like Jim Backus has come up the last couple of days.
I can't see anything.
Because Brian and I
talking about him on Current Geek yesterday with monocles.
That's right. We were talking about monocles and whether or not. And if we think it was him that had a monocle, but now I'm not sure if he did.
No. He never had a monocle.
Magoo didn't have anything except for that prescription windshield they put in that one time and that one gag.
But he also had a fedora, but he was bald a lot too.
Look here, study.
I thought he always just walked around bald.
I thought he had a fedora for a while.
No, he had a hat. Yeah, he had a hat too.
And you go out
and
like a little...
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yes, because he'd tip his hat to the ladies.
Yeah.
But it was really a lamp.
There was a Mr. Magoo moment when he put on...
Hold on a second. Brian Ibbot just summed up Mr. Magoo in one sentence. He would tip his hat to the ladies, but it was a lamppost. That's it.
Nice. That was it.
That's the entire thing.
Yeah. That was the gag.
Oh, it's amazing. All right. Here's. All right.
By the way, I looked it up. Poison sumac is not found west of like Louisiana.
Oh,
boom!
Wow. Well, he was lying to her again. Just another lie.
That is a mistake.
Just a string of lies after decking her, is what that was. Here's a big. I wrote gross because the sound is. I think I don't remember. What is this?
Well, what are we gonna do?
I don't know what you're gonna do. I'm gonna get me a bottle of tequila, one of those little Keno girls that can suck the chrome off a trailer hitch and then kind of kick back.
Gross.
Yeah. Did anyone else at that point just really picture this disgusting image of Willie Nelson receiving fellatio?
Yeah, it was.
I am still hung up on what is a Keno girl. I have been in a lot of Keno bars.
No, that's absolutely a thing. It's like a cocktail waitress, but she comes around with your
the one who comes by your table with
and picks up your drops off a new sheet, picks up your old sheet, takes it back to the main thing.
Yeah, but can they suck the chrome off a trailer hitch? That's the worst phrase.
Some of them can.
Okay.
I would have never called the woman with the cigarettes and the Keno cards a Keno girl. That's just not the word.
A Keno girl. I don't know. I mean, it's
79, man.
Yeah.
79.
So, and never mind.
We're
already in a.
Oh, this movie.
I want to know more about your. This trailer hitch thing.
Well, it's the whole sucking a golf ball through 6 feet of garden hose or something. But whatever the line is from Real Genius, the same kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that's really what you want.
No, you don't, is my point.
I think it sounds good, but I don't think that's really what
Here's what you do. If somebody can suck the chrome off of a trailer hitch, you need to get the pitchforks and the freaking tiki torches and chase that monster out of town. Because that sounds awful.
Right. I feel like I'm the only person who's seen the movie Basketball.
You are.
No, I've seen it.
Good. Oh, no, I did see it. It's the Trey Parker deal. Yeah, I saw that. I remember that. It was like, it wasn't very good, I remember. I remember it being kind of bad.
No, not that good.
Because they didn't write it.
Cover Take On Me by Real Big Fish in there.
Oh, yep. All right. Well, there is something to hope for. Here's, I got some old audio of Ibbot being asked by a girl to prom. And here's how that went.
Can I come with you?
No.
Jeez, you were really
no.
No.
Please,
can
no.
you suck the chrome off of a trailer hitch?
Yes. Okay, you can come then.
Okay, come on.
come with me.
I don't know. Let me see.
I'll pick you up at 8.
I just happen to have one with me.
Yeah. Is chrome? I thought trailer hitch.
It's chrome plated. It's the cord.
Okay, plated. Yeah. All right. Because pure chrome, that would make no sense. All right. Anyway, whatever. I'm looking too deep into it.
She can suck the chrome off Google.
Here is a bad Utah joke. So I captured one of these. Here you go.
Where is he? Utah? Get the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Have them sing him in, but get him.
That is such a 70s movie thing to do. Yeah.
By the way, we never even talked about that guy. He's the dad from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yep.
And
lots of things.
And he looks a lot like Michael Ironsides, but he's not.
Yeah.
Many things before then. He was quite the star back in the day.
Well, always an evil butthole, though. Always.
Yeah, John Saxon is the guy's name.
I'm an evil butthole.
Is he still kicking it? He's still around, right?
He is still around. He was born in 1935.
Yeah, he's been around for a while.
He's getting up there. Yeah, we saw him in From Dusk Till Dawn. Have we seen Enter the Dragon?
No. We saw the other. Oh, no, maybe we did. Was that the one we saw? I don't remember now.
I don't remember, but he's in that Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Still working today.
Still one of the stuff. That's right. He was one of the major bad guys in Beverly Hills Cop 3. So we saw him there too.
Yeah, he's lately busy. Took a big break in the. Mm-hmm. 2010. He took a break. Didn't show up again until 2015, and then lately he's done some other stuff where he plays. He's in a movie called "Bring Me the Head of Lance Hendrickson."
Wow.
I want to know what that is.
Wow.
That sounds fun. Okay.
But we'll he big in the 70s, like make an appearance in a cop show of the week kind of thing.
This is great. Listen to this synopsis.
Okay.
When 80s B movies icon Tim Thomerson wakes up one day, he realizes the acting roles are not coming his way anymore. He sets out on a quest to find his former co-star, Lance Hendrickson. To discover his secret of Hollywood longevity and gets more than he bargained for in the process. This thing's got Tim Thomerson, Lance Hendrickson, the guy I just mentioned, John Saxon, Adrienne Barbeau. Let's see. Anyone else I know? Maybe not. That might be all the names.
So it's funny because, you could see this being like almost like a documentary about, let's talk about the B actors from 80s action films. But it sounds like it's a fictional.
Yep. Totally is. Yeah, totally is. That looks like fun.
John Witherspoon. Yeah.
I'm just surprised that we've seen John Saxon in several films already on FilmSack. Yeah. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, he'd been around. We don't really talk about him much, but there he is. Where was I? Brimley. Here's Brimley.
We got a phone. Come on in.
All right. Thanks, dude. Appreciate it.
Put a Trump alert on that.
Yeah, we should. Wait, where is I can't find it. There it is. I found it.
Like, this whole thing falls apart, except you get angel help from somebody. Like, he delivers you past trouble. He gives you food and money. He lets you make your phone call. Like, this was
turns days. Down $50,000 of cash.
Yeah. Deus Ex Brimley.
Yeah.
Deus
Ex Brimley. Oh, please don't let him be topless in that movie. Here's Hallis. What? Oh.
Hallis.
Okay, great. I don't think I'd
Ptosis.
Get Hallie.
That was the explanation for her name being Hallie?
Yeah, it's dumb.
Okay.
Weak sauce description. Here's the nasty swallow. All right. This is him swallowing his coffee or something, and it's gross. Ugh, dude.
Wow.
Guilt.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Some fancy Foley work on that one.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I don't like it at all. It really makes me uncomfortable, that sound. Okay, that's not how you say that is what I wrote.
My mom went to get butane.
Butane? It's not butane. My mom went to go get butane. It's my mom went to go get butane.
Butane.
Right. My mom went to get butane.
Butane. That's not it.
Butane.
Yeah, that's not
it. The emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Right.
Totally. And it bugged me. All right. She enjoyed it. Is this?
It's running right off of the mouth.
I enjoyed it.
I'm glad you got a response at the end. That makes it even better.
It, out of context, it almost sounds like that's all she's saying she enjoyed. Like, right. That's her.
I enjoyed it. It's
running right off of the mouth.
I enjoyed it.
You cut out that at the mouth part, you'd have a nice little scene.
Yes. It gets better every time. That's the great thing about this clip.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm keeping that one for a long time. And that, ladies and gentlemen, represents that. Oh, look, it's the Film Sack Checklist. Utah? Check. Lady Hair Helmet? Check. Doing It in the Dirt? Check. Star Trek Connections, we have a couple. Nicholas Coster was Fitzgerald in this. I don't know who that is. Anyway, I know who Fitzgerald, the guy who was like his lackey for the bad guy, kept coming in with paperwork, yes, and stuff.
Right.
Not to be confused with Nicolaj Coster-Waldau.
Yes, not that guy.
No one would ever get those two confused.
It's on TNG season 3. He played Admiral Anthony Haftel in The Offspring, and also James Sicking, who played Dietrich here, was in Star Trek 3, played Captain Stiles in The Search for Spock. Soundtrack great. I give it a T for terrible, except for that Willie Nelson stuff is all right. It's fine. You know,
dude, near the end of the movie, when they play two songs at the same time, I was screaming.
Oh, what was that about? I thought it was me. I looked for open tabs. I thought something was going on because I was recording it at my computer, and I thought, did I open two of these? Is there something going on? That was jacked up. Why didn't I capture that? Shoot, I should have captured it.
It's horrible. Mm-hmm. It makes me mad.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
It almost ruins the movie.
I did say I noticed the same thing too. Do you hear two things playing right now?
Yeah, and they weren't like complimentary or like row your boat.
It was for a long time. It was for like 2 minutes.
It's super bad.
Slow fade. Yeah,
really, really bad. It was Mama's Don't Let Your Kids Go Be Cowboys, and then and some other song overlapped with it. It was terrible,
like violin piece or something like that. Yeah,
really, really bad. Anyway, there's that. A Twitter post. You guys sum this thing up in 140 characters or less. That's what we do, and we're going to start with Randy.
The Electric Horseman. When you take 3 hours of tedium and edit it down, you still have 2 hours of tedium. It's an electric boar, man.
Electric boar.
Boar man.
Yeah, boar man. Also a dumb title, just going to say. You literally take the one moment when he's got lights on him and say, that's what we're calling our movie. Electric.
Electric Urban boar. Cowboy.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. That would have been a better name, actually, mm-hmm. if it hadn't already been taken. Mm-hmm. Actually,
Ranch Breakfast.
Can we do? There you go. I'm in. Ranch Breakfast. Brian Dunaway.
The Electric Horseman, like every Willie Nelson cowboy song ever in one movie. Toast, bacon,
nuts, olives,
eggs.
That's so dumb. Finally, Brian Hibbett.
The Electric Horseman. Currently searching Epicurious for the recipe for a police car sandwich. Ah, here it is. Take two cop cars and then some light filling.
Some light filling.
Very nice. Nice. Okay, well, in light of that, I was just handed these. Oh, look at this. Today's alternate titles. It was almost called The Electric Mustache or The Use of Force Man. I don't know why that was a thing. It was midnight. I don't know what I was doing. So ignore that.
It was forceful.
Yeah. I was trying. I don't know what I was trying to do there. Hey, look, it's an email from filmsack@gmail.com. That's the address people use. And David Galick wrote in from Kansas City, who says this. Hey, guys, I noticed you brought up Chuck Lorre's music background on the Can't Buy Me Love episode. You might also find it interesting to know that Chuck Lorre co-wrote the theme song to the original 1987 cartoon series, The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Really?
In Two and a Half Men, Charlie Sheen plays a music composer, and I didn't know that was Charlie Sheen's character, a music composer in that show. I never watched it. So.
Yeah, it was.
Yes, he wrote how jingles. That's how he was so rich that he could live in Malibu on the beach.
Yeah, he thinks all that's right. Reflection of what he used to be. Anyway, in fact, in one episode, Charlie had to write a theme song to a dark anime comic that they are making into a Saturday morning cartoon, and I'm sure that's based off Laurie's actual experience writing a theme song for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Just thought there was some interesting trivia there. Too many people know about. Thanks, and keep up the good work on the show. Signed, David Gulick of Kansas City.
Good stuff.
Dave Gulick. That sounds like a boy I want to go talk to about a horse. Good name. I like it. So there you go. If you want to send your own emails in and tell us cool facts that we didn't know, that's great. Filmsack@gmail.com. Our next movie is Dreamcatcher.
Yeah. That's right. We're starting the spooky October, guys.
Yeah.
We're going to watch scary movies in October. We're going to watch a Pinhead movie. We're going to watch a Freddy movie. We're going to watch an M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong movie.
Mm.
So this movie next week basically just takes place hanging down from the rearview mirror of a guy driving a Subaru.
Yeah, the whole time. Exactly. Or well done. It's a dream catcher. Yeah.
Yeah, or it takes place from a gift shop in Tucson.
it's a Stephen King book or short story. I don't know. Dreamcatcher. It's one of those, right? Isn't it a Stephen King thing?
A Stephen King. Try to remember if it was a short story or a novella. I can't remember. I'm trying to remember.
Morgan Freeman, Thomas Jane. This is the 2003 one? Is it the one?
Yes.
Oh, I'm excited because I haven't seen this. All right. Yeah, it is Stephen King. He wrote the novel.
You guys are in for a treat.
The novel's about 15 years old.
Oh, wow. Look at this.
I read it, but I don't remember it anymore.
Morgan Freeman, Thomas Jane, Jason Lee. I like him. That's the one guy. Damian Lewis, Timothy Oliphant, Tom Sizemore, Donnie Wahlberg. This is a big cast.
I'm telling you, you're in for a treat.
Okay, I'm stoked now. I was already excited, but I'm more excited now. We'll see how hung Thomas Jane is in this movie.
Hey-o.
All right. So anyway, that's what we're doing next week, and it's always a fun month, maybe our funnest month. In retrospect, to do the Halloween business. So we're very much looking forward to that. That's going to do it for us. Filmsack.com is the website. You can also, like I said, send us emails at filmsack@gmail.com. We're on Twitter @Filmsack. And if you'd like to leave us reviews on wherever you get your podcast, be that iTunes or Google Play or wherever it is, please do so. It helps us in lots of ways and helps spread the news about the show. We're an obscure, weird show, so sometimes it's hard to grow the audience. But hey, tell your friends, tell your mothers. Hide your wives.
What? Mothers about films.
Tell your mom.
But not to hide the part where we talk about sucking the chrome off a trailer.
Exactly. She may.
And also, say hi to your mother for me.
Yes. Very good. Nice Donnie Wahlberg moment.
Yeah. Thanks, Other Wahlberg.
thanks, Other Wahlberg. That's going to do it for us. Mm-hmm. Thanks, everybody, for listening. For me, for Brian, and for Randy. we'll see you. That was a bad horse. We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
My mom went to get butane.
Yeah, get some butane.
Like my butane. It's like butane. Beck trying to bend a word to try to make it rhyme in one of his songs.
Yeah.